now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix.
Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, I have a very special guest. Carol Martin is returning to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. She's a dear friend of mine, a MyLab, and has had lots of experiences, both of the ET and the military and the off-world varieties. And she's got a lot of information to share. She's been having a recent uptick of experiences lately. And I wanted to get this discussion out there because it seems to me that the activity is picking up for certain MyLabs and abductees again. So without any further ado, Carol, welcome back to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Thanks for having me, James.
Well, before we get into the nitty-gritty of the MyLab stuff, the on and off world deep black stuff, kind of bring our listeners up to speed. You don't have to be specific about your location, but to just tell our listeners a bit about what's going on in your neck of the woods, because it's all connected. I really believe that the activity that some MyLabs are reporting, whether it's off-world or not, has a direct bearing on what's going on here, this tyranny that's coming down 360 degrees all around us. So give us a thumbnail version of what's going on in your neck of the woods, Carol.
Yeah, well, I live in rural Victoria. And as of late, we've been in lockdown. I have a town that's probably 40 minutes away from me that it's in total lockdown, and boots on ground, food rations, and it's not very nice for the people that's living there. Probably about a month before that actually happened, I had an off-world experience where I was taken to be trained. And this particular time, I just walked out my door. It was just open the door, walked out, taken in a black car. And I found then myself in, it's like a craft, you know, like the only thing that was weird was there was no seams. There was no straight walls, nothing. It was like a pod. And there was six other men, and I was the only female. And I just sat there smiling at them, and I'm thinking, here we go. And I remember one man muttered something in Russian, and it was strange because I woke up the next day with my nails long, really lethargic, sore shoulder. And I remember that when I was training in that combat and everything else, is that I was carrying something really heavy on my right shoulder, and I've had trouble with my shoulder ever since. And my business partner was saying, your nails are long, like, snap out of it. You're not even here. What's going on? So I kind of filled him in a little bit of it. And I said to him, well, I've been in training, and I'm doing all this stuff, and I'm walking and going upstairs, downstairs, and I don't know how to explain it. It was like I was in war, and I was just going from room to room to room and checking to see, taking kids, saving kids. What else? I was underground. Just ridiculous. It was just all over the place. It wasn't consistent like my usual experience. One minute I would be there. It was like one half of the day I'd be saving children. Next half of the day I'd be kicking somebody's ass. And at the end of it, just before I woke up, I saw a specific person that's been on the television every single day. And it's like, and he looked so disheveled and so just tired. And I'm thinking, now I understand what I was doing for those parts that I couldn't really remember. And, I've just been training and kicking butt for the past 3 months.
Well, that's good, actually. And just to backtrack a bit, I remember you told me it's been a couple of years now, at least. But and refresh my memory if I'm getting anything wrong. Some time ago, some American called you on the phone and described himself as an American Marine general or something like that.
Yeah, he was a remote viewer called Michael.
Uh-huh.
And he could clearly see everything in my home, how I was sitting, where I was sitting, what I was wearing, and I told him, quite frankly, to F out of my house. Just get out of my house. And I had to block him, and it took me about 7 goes because he kept popping up.
Oh, you mean popping up on social media, on the internet?
Yeah. Yep. I couldn't get rid of him at all. It was like, oh, this is ridiculous. So I did something that I told myself that I would never do, and I just astral kicked his ass. I'm thinking, well, you know, there was this one person that has trained me, and I'm just going to use that training, and here I come. If you want to play that way, then I'll end it, because it was really like, you know, and he went after a friend of mine on Facebook, and, he was really relentless. Really relentless, and after blocking every account that he had, he didn't pop up anymore.
Oh, okay, good. And yeah. You thrashed him astrally, huh?
I think so. I'm thinking, well, you know, I think I put my training into good use and get rid of him that way, because when I get pissed off, I get pissed off. And no one's going to mess with me like that.
And there was another individual who told you anonymously on the phone that when the time comes, Earth changes, Planet X, and then the magma will be obscene, that there'll be volcanoes erupting all over the place. Do you remember that discussion?
Yeah, I do. I do. That was just the weirdest phone call I ever had. And just to be told of what's to come, and I truly believe that he was telling me of what's happening now. In his own way back then, because it was quite a long time ago. And I've had a couple of phone calls after that, and just that's when I started retreating, because I had a few visits. And when one gets visits, I tend to like go back under my rock a little bit, reevaluate and re-strategize and move on to a different plan. So I'm still here to fight the battle that needs to be done. A bit rusty because it hasn't been, or maybe I don't remember, but I haven't been able to have that total recall like I used to. Whether that's old age, I don't know.
Well, I think it's happening to a lot of my labs. There's a lot of frequency jamming that's preventing people from remembering the ops and experiences they've had during the night. And for some people, they wake up and they remember things for the first few minutes, and then it just disappears from gone from their conscious awareness. So that's been going on too. Now, you did report in the recent past some rather blatant surveillance, like these people wanted you to know that they were watching you again.
So I had, you know, yourself for many years now, I've had knack of seeing crafts. I've had crafts follow me. I've had one particular rectangle craft that's been with me since I was 5, let's say. And I just have an ability, I can see them and I take photos of them. They might not come up as clear as people would like, but it's very hard to ask a UFO to stay still and say cheese. And I had a brilliant shot, and I've got this that I never posted, because I vowed never to post anything like that again, just the mediocre ones that I get. And I went to work and I was so excited because it's been a long time since I did anything like that. And it was a quiet day and it was a Monday. And I went and to our drinks room, storing drinks in our fridge, walked back to the end of our restaurant and just had cold chill. And I turned around and I see this man, he was dressed like 1940s. I've never seen a seam on a pair of slacks so harsh in my life. And he was just sitting there with a straw kind of hat. It was tilted. And I just looked at his hands. And he had one eye that wasn't obstructed by the hat. And I just kind of looked at him and I went, I am in a world of shit right now. What do I do? So I went back into the drinks room and text my business partner and I said, that man that's sitting there, what did he order? And he told me what he ordered. And I'm thinking, that is such a strange thing to order because someone like that does not eat anything like that. And I thought, oh God, Carol, just be brave. Go about your business and everything will be all right. So I mustered up my, you know, energy and everything else that I needed and I walked out and he just looked at me and he said, needn't I remind you that you are not to publicly post any photos, and he wanted my photos. And I said, excuse me? I said, how about you just leave my restaurant, thank you. And inside I was just shaking. I'm thinking, here we go. It's been so long since I've had anything like that done. So he left and I looked at my friend, you know, my business partner, and I said, oh my God. I said, not again. And he went, go home, take a break. And I got this for, you know, the next couple of days. So I went home. And not long ago, I went to go into my car, drive to work, and I had a car that was parked directly opposite my house. And I thought, oh God, not again. I thought, what is this clown doing? So I went to reverse, he was going forward. And I thought, what? I thought, if I reverse anymore, he's going to smash into my car. And couldn't see much into the car. I thought, oh my gosh. So I drove forward and sat there and thinking, what do I do? So I went, stuff it, I'll drive reverse because I need to go. And he just went full throttle. And he stopped probably about a few millimetres away from my car and got out and he just threatened me to shut up, not to speak, wanted photos. I said, well, I don't have anything you want. And I said to him, need I remind you that you are on private property and you are to leave. But that to me was just alarming. And I thought, what do I do? What do I do? And then I remember so many people saying, Carol, you've got to speak out because you've shut up for so long that it's all escalating again. And we're not going to have you much longer if you don't speak out, because I've always been told if we speak out, we're much safer in numbers, right? And I thought, I'll say something. And as soon as I said something, it backed off and it's been quiet since then. But I still refuse to post any other photos that I have.
Well, I saw the photo you took of the vehicle that was parked with the front end facing out directly across the street. I mean, just the look of it, you know, rather large vehicle. It was meant to be menacing. It was meant to be intimidating.
That's right. And, you know, like, when I used to go sky watching all those years ago with a certain somebody, it just reminded me back, you know, of all the hassle and the trouble I had back then, and having a young family and everything else, and trying to do, you know, the best of both worlds. And I thought, I don't know how to stop this. I really, really don't. And that's why I haven't been speaking or anything like that much. But I thought, if I don't say something, they're going to do something, and better if I say something, because if something does happen to me, you guys would know Carol hasn't been on for a month, something must be up. And that's just the gist of it. And happened when I was much younger, and it's happening again now. So
there's also something to do with your locale, which will remain nameless. I would think that there is some kind of ET slash perhaps military base there. And there's definitely some kind of like aerial Stargate activity or something going on for there to be so much aerial activity there. Broad daylight. I mean, the
broad photos daylight.
Are,
yep.
Yeah.
Are just like the military base is about 2 hours, a bit more than 2 hours away from me. So it's not exactly close. But I do have a facility that is a maker of, you know, army tanks, ammo, all what to do with war and everything else. So they have been incredibly busy of late, probably for a good year. And I drive past this place every day. And some nights I was sitting with a friend of mine and you can hear something happening underground. So I do believe that there's a tunnel system that runs from that facility right under my house, because I've sat in my house with friends and they're like, what in the world was that? And I said, it sounds like gear changing to me. So I think that must have a huge link with everything that's going on. And unfortunately, my house sits right on top of it, of whatever it is. But there isn't a day that I don't see something that makes one person go, what in the world? And I can literally sit outside for 5 minutes with a camera and get about 7 or 8 crafts that are low flying. So I'm not sure whether it's one of theirs or what I zone in. I don't know. I have no idea. Not that smart to know what's man-made or what's actually from the ETs or whatnot, because they're all really, really clever these days, aren't they?
Yeah, and the problem is exacerbated because some elements of the military work with some groups of ETs, right? So some of the craft may even be crewed by both ETs and humans. Now, you mentioned earlier tonight about a rectangular craft that you'd seen since you were a child. Could you elaborate on that? Because that's come up again in the recent past. And I wanted to add my 2 cents worth. So I'd like to hear about your experiences and eyewitness encounters with a rectangular craft. And, you know, if you can describe the dimensions and how large it was and the circumstances of how you saw this thing.
Yeah, when I was really little, I had a UFO sighting. So my old neighbor, he was a sergeant in the military, and he lived next door with his wife. We were really close as neighbors. And one day, he called my dad, and I came out because he then called me, and there was a huge disc just above our home. And just weirdly, I can't forget this, because why would you tell this to any child? But he turned around to me and he said, Carol, these beings are here for you. And I just looked at him. So this neighbor, he always made just these obstacle courses that his daughter and I would do when we were little. We thought it was the most fun thing ever, because we'd climb up on the wooden board and jump over the fence and crawl on our, you know, bellies and jump through hoops and tires from, you know, those big ass tires from the military trucks that he'd bring home when he'd come home. And, you know, so I thought, oh yeah, okay. So I'm standing out there with my dad and my neighbor, our neighbor, and looking at this disc. Thought nothing of it. Dad went inside and I'm like, no, I want to stay and just stare at it, because it was so big, James. It was just huge, and the color was this odd gray. And before I knew it, my mum was calling me, Carol, come inside. It's dinner time. And I'm like, no, it can't be, because I just got out of here and it was morning. But I went inside, and then afterwards, probably about 3 days later, these men came knocking on my mum and dad's door, and they were petrified. And before I knew it, we were hoisted and moved overseas. And where my dad's from, he lived near the Pyramid of the Sun in Bosnia, and that's where I grew up. We came, you know, we traveled back and forth to Australia, to Bosnia, So, you know, didn't do much school at all, apart from homeschooling from my mum. And then when we came back to Australia, that's when I went back to school and everything else. But my experiences then changed again. And in my dreams, I met this man called Joachim. And Joachim, he had a German accent. He has a German accent, and he had kind of longish hair and very high up in the ranks of the military. And he took me aside and he said, "I'm going to train you." And I went, okay, did not dare speak back, just nodded and said, "Yes, sir." And when I was 14, I had another like traumatic experience. I had a really strange car follow me, and that really traumatized me for many years after that. I had a white Valiant that would just pop up out of nowhere, out of the blue, James. Like there was a shopping center near our home back in Australia, and you could walk there and within 2 minutes you were there. But that would just pop up. And they followed me for 9 months. And that 9 months, I couldn't go anywhere without them popping up and following me. The windows were really, really tinted, so I couldn't see them clearly. I saw the shadow of their shoulders, and they were inches apart, and there were four of them in there. One time I was sitting in our lounge room and they were up our driveway, and I grabbed the biggest knife my mum had, and that was a cleaver. And I'm thinking, I will take you all on and you are to leave. And that absolutely frightened the 14-year-old Carol, believe you me. I don't know to this day who they were. But my sister at the time had her husband, and they came around a corner and they just pulled out of the driveway. And by the time he jumped back into the car and went to chase them, they were completely gone. This car was always immaculate. Always immaculate. And after that, when I turned 15, Joachim came back into my dreams, so to speak, how we say our experiences, dreams. And he trained me up. And there was three other men that were training along with me and as kids, but it wasn't in Australia, it was somewhere else. I do believe it was England. And I was trained. And and it just escalated from there. So every time I see that rectangle craft, and I've got thousands of photos of that rectangular craft, every time he pops up, I have a MyLab experience, and he's always in them, always. Always in them, always checking
on me. That's interesting because Jorge Martin, the great Puerto Rican investigator, I forwarded this. It showed up in my newsfeed from Jorge Martin, and what it was is a very recent photograph at relatively low altitude of what is clearly a large rectangular craft that was hiding in an artificial cloud bank, and I've seen craft create an artificial cloud bank in the past. In that case, it was a spherical globe-shaped ship. But in this photo, there was a large rectangular craft that was inside what I perceived to be an artificial cloud bank. I was speaking to a friend who lives north of me, not that far, probably a 20, 30-minute drive thereabouts. And she told me, along a stretch of road in the sky, there is a portal opening or a stargate because she's seen craft fly in and out of it. Yep. In midair. And one of the craft she'd seen was what she described as a large cube-shaped craft, right? Now, what I have seen in a lot of my dreams, and this goes back decades by now, is a large, well, one of the types of craft that I've seen in my dreams is a large rectangular craft. And in some of them, they're coming down from the sky and they're coming down through the chemtrail haze, like headed straight for the ground and just causing pandemonium and people freaking out, end of the world, Chicken Little time, you know, people running around in panic. And I'm looking up, just go, wow, look at this. So I'm wondering if the appearance of that thing in such a UFO hotspot as Puerto Rico, and I'm sure there's more than just one, if it perhaps is a portent of things to come, because the way things are accelerating now, Carol, that anything can happen terrestrially here on Earth, throughout the solar system, outside of the solar system, it's all interrelated as far as our planet is concerned. I'm just wondering if, you know, we've already had a large contingent of different ETs here for a long time that have set up, you know, pretty much permanent bases here for thousands and thousands of years, if not longer. I'm wondering if reinforcements of one kind or another, one side or another, are not starting to stream in here. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's just, it's very bizarre, isn't it? Like I say, I've always seen that craft, and every single time I'm always dragged off somewhere, you know, and it's just, I've yet to make like what kind of connection and to where I was going, especially in the past 3 months, where I just get so angry at myself because, you know, they've allowed me to have total recall all my life. And to actually see a rectangle craft and go, okay, Joachim's here, what now? And then to remember the first 5 minutes and go, I can't remember anything else. So yes. I'm not sure why they're doing that, but my body's telling me that I've been doing something because I am in a lot of pain all the time. But I can imagine all the off worlds and all the other beings coming into fruition and coming down. And like I say, something has to give and something needs to be done in order to stop what's happening. And if I'm part of that, and I feel I am, because I tell you what, when you're training, you're freaking sore for a long time. And you know yourself that I've told you that I've woken up with fractures.
Yeah, so you woke up and you had like a broken ankle that time?
Yeah, I had a broken ankle that pretty much healed itself within a few days. And the doctors were just like, excuse me. And now my shoulder has dislocated itself. And it's getting better every day. But, yeah, it's just one of those things where you have all these injuries and I'm back to good in the next few days or whatever. So let's hope that happens. But, yeah.
Well, you mentioned the long nails, and that does happen to some abductees after experiences.
Yeah, that's only happened to me once before. And, but this time they were really long. So I'm thinking, okay, like how fast do nails grow, and how long was I away for?
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember tidbits, and I remember a few people's faces, but I don't know. I've not met them yet. And I've always had this ability to come across these people, but I've yet to come across these people. I don't know why they do that to me and put me in a position where I bump into somebody and I went, oh, I know you. But I don't say anything because I don't want to sound like an absolute crazy person.
Yeah, you mean meet them on the surface world, like in everyday life?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like I had that one time where I had that guy, I had a MyLab experience where I was walking this town was absolutely, there was no one there. So I walked through thinking, how come there's no one around? And I had this one guy sitting on a bench all by himself, just looking right at me, thinking, why is he staring at me? There's no one around, obviously probably thinking, oh my gosh. So I found myself in this huge mall type shopping center type thing with spiral stairs. The elevators that you would go into, I had to climb in into them. They were that ginormous. I'm thinking, I can't even step into this. I had to literally climb up and over to get in them. And I just had that kind type of feel. And when I woke up and that happened, I had an experience a couple of times after that with the same person. And when I went on to, you know, my normal everyday life and I went into town and there he stood. And I'm in my car looking at him. I'm like, pardon? How is that? Have I just fallen off the same wagon, as I say? Like, how can that be? You were just in my dreams and now you're physically standing looking at me in the car, just staring at me. I'm thinking, am I being watched? What is going on? Am I being punked or something? And that was a long time ago, and that was when I was really learning everything that I need to know and getting into, you know, the whole MyLab scene and what that really is and everything. Because when you're young, you just don't have anybody to – I didn't have anybody. And I had to, you know, like Google back then didn't exist and couldn't really Google what my dreams were, weren't they? So I had to wait. And in time, I guess they do that because in time as you get older, you get more mature and then you can cope with the reality of what was really happening. So, yeah, that was really weird to see someone who's been in my dreams of quite a few times and he's just standing there in town on the pavement just looking at me while I'm sitting at the red light. So that was very strange.
Well, it's not that you needed it, but it's confirmation that
absolutely
it was real and that, you know, you see this person in whatever context you take away from it, whether it's, you know, an operation, a training, a dream, whatever the case may be, then whammo, you see him there on the sidewalk.
I'm like, this is not happening. You can't take me now. I am going out for lunch. Leave me alone. Yeah, no, that was bizarre for me, you know, and then after that, everything just turned really strange. And I know now why, you know, I've been so trained, and because it just lasted for so long. Like when I speak to others, theirs were so quick. And I'm thinking, yeah, but this took ages. Like, was I maybe defiant or didn't take orders very well? I remember a few times I'm like, I'm not doing that.
And you mean as far as the length and duration of the training you went through?
Yeah, absolutely. It took a few years. Yeah. Because I was like, I'm not doing that. And they're like, you're doing it. And I'm like, I don't think so. So why they were persistent and I was so stubborn, I have no idea. But
it was almost like, you know, like a stubborn, you know, bronc or horse or something that needed to be broken.
Yeah, pretty much. I was pretty stubborn. Still am. I'm like, I'm not doing that. Yes, you are. No, I'm not. And then I end up doing it anyway because if I don't, I get so sick and I can't afford to do that. And it's like they punish me for not doing what I'm told to do.
Well, they will absolutely do that. That's it's the stick and carrot approach. And
yep.
There's not so much carrots as there are a lot of sticks. No. And they can do things to our health, to our livelihoods. I mean, there's any number of ways from a black covert perspective, these MyLab controllers, can do things that radically impact our everyday life, our everyday in the world, surface level waking consciousness life. They can do things to us, which just people that don't go through it or don't understand it or don't believe it will never understand, right? And then you add on top of that. I don't know if this happened to you, but it happened to me a lot and to some others. where they just decide whether it's on a whim or it's part of a training schedule. I don't know. You know, just to electromagnetically beam the hell out of you, right? Yeah. It's like, oh, it's time to beam James again. Let's just shock the hell out of him from a remote distance for whatever, you know, demented purpose, right?
I actually spoke to a really good friend of mine, and I told her what they do to me if I don't comply to their wishes. And I said, it's not like, you know, I'm being that stubborn or whatever. I'm tired and I'm old and I don't want to do it anymore. Go pick somebody else up that's much younger and stronger and faster and skinnier and whatever. And I told her what they do to me. And it could be as simple as a helicopter from the fire department in town flying over and how they attack. I'm so nauseated, James, that I'm on the floor just gasping for air. And I know that they do this quite often to targeted people, but holy crap. That I never want to go through that again. That was so brutal that I was physically ill for days after that. I'm just like, that's what they do if you don't comply to their wishes at times. Other times they leave me alone, but then they just take me against my will pretty much. And so many people would tell me, Carol, you know, you can stop this. And it's like, you can pray to whoever you want. And you can do whatever you want. I've done it all. I've even stooped so low to even ask the so-called devil to let me go. But nothing that I've done in all these years has stopped them from taking me. Nothing. So I'm not sure where they get the information from. But I can assure you, James, I'm so exhausted from it all. That from now, I just do whatever they say. Joachim says now, it's now. I just say how high, and that's it. If he says jump, I ask how high, just to get it over and done with.
And that's the thing, because we literally live two or more lives. We have the day to day life. Get up in the morning, go to work, and make a living kind of life, and then at night. And when I went through cycles of a lot of activity, a lot of accessing of me, mm-hmm. and lots of training, I went through phases of lots of training. I would wake up and it would feel like I've run a marathon, where my thighs would just be so sore, and I could barely move, and I'm just sore. I felt like I'd been run over by a truck. Yep. You know what I mean? And then you're foggy headed, the fugue state, and sometimes like a bad chemical taste in your mouth or whatever. But you know what? You just got to get up, shower, shave, do all the things you normally do, and then go to work and just carry on, crack on, because that's all you can do. Because if, and we know from past experience, we just talked about that, how they can interfere with our day-to-day existence, right, in myriad ways. So it was almost like, okay, they put me through my paces again last night, put me through all this training and all this other bizarre crap, and then they just like kick me to the curb again, and I wake up in bed, and there's nothing to do but to get on with it. There's nothing to do but to crack on, because if one spends too much time feeling sorry for themselves, what happens is that locks them into another frequency, like a lower frequency bandwidth, which makes it even easier for them to mess with you, right? Yeah. And it could take a whole nother level, take it to an whole another level of exploitation, where suddenly you just start getting beamed a lot, not just at night, but you know, during the day, and it just all these different ways they try to break you, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, for some people, sadly, it has broken them. We've seen in the past how some people with our kinds of experiences, they don't cope too well. And, you know, they lose it after a while.
Mm. Well, I did for a long time. I did. And I spent many a time in a shower just absolutely bawling, because I was so afraid I'm losing it. I'm absolutely losing it. And I went through a really horrific experience where I really had to, like, psych myself up to even get up the next day. And that's when I said to myself, Carol, if you don't fight back and you don't do as you're told and you just get up and you just keep going, and it's like a voice in my head, you know, that whole split personality thing, because a lot of people say the next day they know that I've had an experience because I'm a bit of an asshole.
yeah. Sometimes it bleeds over. Sometimes the alter persona, if you will, just being fed up with it all, and the attitude, it can definitely creep into our waking consciousness.
It certainly, especially back then. And so that really woke me up and made me realize that I just have to push on forward, no matter what they throw at me, no matter what I've seen, what I do, because some of them, sometimes it's really horrific. And I just have to kind of push that under the, you know, push it under the rug, so to speak, and move on and just live my life the best way I know how to, and always stay vigilant. And I'm guessing every other MyLab's the same way.
Yes, because like you pointed out, some of the things that we've observed, we collectively observed in the underground bases and off-world, are truly, truly horrific. Humans of all ages held in captivity and having things done to them, and not just humans being experimented or brutally treated, but other beings too, that are slaves or whatever. So when we're exposed to that, and then we wake up and we're back in the day-to-day world, the sense of unreality, it sometimes follows into our day-to-day existence, because when we're going through the motions, and especially if you're stuck in a dead-end job like I've had in the past, you know, you begin to question, like, the meaning of it all. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm here in this dead-end job, just barely getting by, and yet they're using me for all these things. Mm-hmm. And nobody can understand or relate or even believe what I'm going through. It adds to the sense of unreality. And I don't mean this in an elitist sense. I think other MyLabs can relate. But after a while, and it's not a constant feeling, but at times it creeps in. In Harry Potter terms, I begin to look around at the normies around me, and I begin to think of them as like muggles, you know what I mean? where it's like, you know, they're in their humdrum day-to-day existence talking about the same boring, mindless things. And especially nowadays, with all of the tyranny that's coming down all across the board, you know, the muggles are really starting to get up on my nerves, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So in the past, it was only occasionally when, you know, come back from just a series of, you know, at times pretty brutal experiences in a MyLab in an ET sense. And then you're stuck in a day-to-day world. You got to listen to people's, you know, gibberish. Yeah. But now, when we know how high, we always knew how high the stakes were, Carol. But now, when we're having these they live moments, like every 11 a.m. here, it's a they live moment, because the same Luciferian hybrid sewer scum are coming on TV, lying through their teeth, just in so many words, telling everyone to commit suicide, right? And then also, you know, all the scolding, all the berating, all the lambasting, telling the public over and over again how to keep screwing things up and making things worse, which necessitates more restrictions, and how they twist the meaning of the word freedom around. Oh, if, you know, five adults have been stabinated, then you have the freedom to go outside, right, as long as you've all been double stabinated, right? Yeah. So they're playing all these word games, and then the muggles all around are just nodding their heads dumbly and just going along with it. And it really instills this sense that, you know, these muggles, they're a form of hybrid too. They're a domesticated, dumbed down, dare I say, retarded kind of version of humanity, where they're just incapable of independent thought. And then when you look at what people like you and I have gone through, and then you contrast it with them, it's like, you know what? We might as well be. We're not in a different world. Unfortunately, we're in the same world. But as far as mentality and everything else, we might as well be in another dimension. So I think that now, especially with everything that's going on, I much rather be talking about, even experiencing some of the stuff that you and I talk about, than have to be around the muggles. You know what I mean? I'd rather be out there, you know, fighting evil, the most evil you can imagine, than just being around these muggles.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, my restaurant is around the corner from the stab chamber, as I call it. And they come in for their treat because they got it. And they waltz on in and tell me how proud they are that they got themselves the jabby jab.
Oh, God.
And here's me after having, you know, this stupid MyLab experience, and I'm trying to, you know, figure out where I was, who the hell were these men, what am I doing in this pod, why was I dressed like that, why can't I remember everything now? And, you know, they're telling me that they got this and that, they're going to buy themselves a small little treat, and I'm like, yeah, you do that. You buy yourself a little treat here. Have something for free. Just get out of my shop. I just don't have any tolerance of them anymore.
Do they give them a voucher or something, or like that? Do they give them a voucher or something?
No voucher, nothing. No. These are the people that think the people on TV are like lords.
Yeah.
And off they go and do as they're told. And then because I'm just around the corner,
just
come and buy, you know, a little snack here and something for a treat for a job well done. And I'm like, no, I can't even speak to them. I get so angry at them. But now it's just like, oh. But I see a little shed of light, and I have these two nurses that come in that are refusing. They've been placed on the desk front. And instead of the initial, you know, injectors, they've been told to go at the front and just be like admin, because they're refusing now to give anybody
the stab.
Yep. And I just looked at them and I went, oh my gosh.
Yes, what? Yes. It's just getting closer and closer to be on the right side. And that's a good point, because what they're doing now is by mandating the stab too. I don't hear about doctors getting, you know, having it mandated. For some reason, they're considered part of the priesthood or something. But certainly the nurses, the paramedics, the ambulance drivers, et cetera, et cetera. And those people have seen and heard and read so much, right? Now, in order for them, and this is just my view, no one else has to think this, and some may perceive it as being somewhat calloused, all right? But if they, a lot of them didn't have any qualms in the past of turning a blind eye to this or stabbing people or whatever the case may be. It only became personal for them when they were told that they needed to get the stabs, right? Suddenly it's like, oh, you know, I'm opting out, my body, my choice. Well, it's like, you should have thought about that when you were stabbing all these people, you know, and then knowing that the medical records are being altered and people were being intentionally misdiagnosed and intubated to death, right? But it doesn't mean that it's too late for them to to get on the winning side. So what I would like to see more of is for them to start speaking out. I mean, you know, the paramedics who have been very busy lately, you know, where I live, it's like 4 or 5 times a day they go, screaming by.
Same, they scream by 4 or 5 times a day.
Yeah. And these are all the, you know, the adverses that are going on, right? And then, like you said about those two nurses, they opted out, and then they don't want to, you know, stab anyone anymore. And, you know, when I talk about, you know, the spirit of resistance, what I'm talking about, and I guess some people can misunderstand where I'm going with it, right? What I mean is the spirit of resistance in the heart and in the mind, which doesn't necessarily involve anything of a kinetic, violent, forceful nature. There's myriad ways one can resist tyranny without resorting to blows. Mm. Now, when I reference things in Australia's military past, I'm not so much focusing on the war aspect of it and the shooting and the killing and the dying. I'm talking about the grim determination. I wouldn't say fatalism, but, you know, these people were behind the eight ball back in the day. And still, they fought, they overcame, they beat the odds when the odds were heavily weighted against them, right? And so when I talk about that, I'm talking about the spirit. I'm talking about the heart and the mentality of resistance in any way, shape, and form, short of outright violence on a surface level, right? And so, you know, people, like there's a classic book, I've referenced it before in my commentaries, called Resistance to Tyranny. And it was written by Professor M.R.D. Foote, who was the official historian for British Special Operations Executive of World War II, the subversive guerrilla warfare aid the resistance organization that the British set up. And in that book, Professor Foote talked about all the different ways in Europe people resisted Nazism. And it was as simple as he cited one example, where after the Americans and the Allies moved into Paris, they went to one of the main train stations in Paris, and the guy who ran the train station had a big chalkboard on one of the platforms, and on the chalkboard it listed all the different rail lines that were out of commission, you know, due to air raids or whatever the case may be, or sabotage, whatever the case may be, and next to each rail line, there was an estimate of how many days and weeks it would take to repair them, right? And so when the Americans show up, they go, oh, wow, it looks like, you know, the rail network here is really screwed up. How long will it take to fix all this? And the guy tells them, oh, we have this sign up just for the Germans. We could fix this in just a matter of days or sooner, right? See, that's what I mean by resistance. It doesn't have to mean, you know, and especially here in Australia where, you know, they've been disarmed because of the Martin Bryant, false flag, poor guy still riding away in isolation. So they've disarmed the entire population. You know, what's people going to rise up here with? Cricket bats? National Rugby League footballs?
No, fight with your words, James.
Fight with your words. It's there's this other ways. And it's out of the bag now. And I'm hoping, and it's a good way to end this first segment, I'm hoping there's something to this trucker rebellion that we're hearing about. And from some of the videotapes that I've watched and listened to, these guys sounded like they were really sincere. They were really pissed off. Yep. And if there's one demographic of people that can restore the honor of Australia, restore the manhood of Australia, right? It's these truckers.
These guys, yeah.
Yeah.
Not just the truckers, but yeah.
Well, you mentioned the bikers are getting into it too.
Yeah, the bikers have agreed to it too. Well, I have a couple of a couple of them are coming, and yeah, they're all for it. They're there.
Well, so, you know, I'm not suggesting it's gonna, you know, be the ultimate game changer, but what it's gonna do, and we talked about this before we started recording, is, you know, the hopeless muggles, they don't even factor into it anymore, right? Like I said, you know, even the teachers, they want to get rid of them now, so they don't need them anymore. But the people that are on the fence, but what I mean by the people on the fence, the ones who know things are screwed up, particularly those who've lost their businesses, lost their livelihoods, have had one or more of loved ones go down from the stabs, right? Those people are already pissed off. So now, when the truckers do this and when the bikers do this and all these other people join in, it's like, you know, they're going to get off the fence one way or the other. They're going to manifest their support for what's going on. And by shutting down the system the way they're doing, it's going to cause a cascading effect, because all these corrupt, you know, followers of the system, they need to eat too. They need fuel too. Right, it's gonna impact them in ways that they didn't, they never perceived or foresaw. And about the muggles too, what's gonna happen because of their cultural Marxist indoctrination, where they've been conditioned to have this psychological dependence on the government. After a while, after they're finished getting mad at the truckers and the bikers and everyone else, their anger is gonna shift towards the government, because the government's not feeding them. Is not taking care of them, right? So I really hope that they go through with this, because it's going to cause a cascading effect on a number of different nodal points in the infrastructure.
Yeah, that's right. Something has to give, and you know, we can only wait and see what's going to happen. And that's on Tuesday, isn't it?
Yeah, that's on Tuesday. So yeah,
brace yourself, everybody. I think.
Well, you know what? You know, the truckers in America, some of them are showing solidarity. I don't know if they're going to go to that extent.
It's worldwide, James.
It's worldwide.
It's worldwide.
Because
nobody better work either.
That's right. And the thing about it is, it's come to a head here, because I remember decades ago, Stan Deo, he was an American. You probably remember him. I think he's since passed away, but he was a true whistleblower. He used to work in Pine Gap in the 70s and I think in the late 60s. And when he came out with some of his information, talking about what was going on at Pine Gap, he also talked about how Australia was going to be one of the main New World Order centers for a number of reasons, mostly because it was English speaking, mm-hmm. that what happens here can be replicated and, you know, done elsewhere. See, because if tyranny comes down in like Timbuktu or Timbuktu 29, for that matter, oh, that's just a foreign country, and foreign countries, they're tyrannical anyway. That's the mentality. But if it happens in a place like Australia, you know, with that whole cultural Australian thing with, you know, Crocodile Dundee and the Bee Gees and all that, that makes people all over the world in the English speaking world sit up and notice, oh, wow, look what they're doing in Australia. Boy, howdy, look what they're doing, right? So for the truckers to do what they're doing, right, I'm really hopeful that we're going to see meaningful change come out of all this. Anyhow, we've had a very interesting first segment with our guest, Carol Martin. And Carol, are you open to, you know, having people email you, or if you want, you can have them route, you know, emails to me and then pass on to you.
Well, yep. Absolutely. If anybody has any that want to get in contact with me, I'm all for that, for definitely.
Okay. And we'll provide that. And for our dear listeners out there, just please, if you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to our website, thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up, become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next segment for the members.